You're about to hear the Sunday sermon from the Grapevine Church of Christ in Grapevine, Texas, a family who's devoted to giving our lives to and living our lives for Jesus Christ. If you have any questions about today's lesson, visit us on our website, www.grapevinechurch.com. Thanks for listening.
So today, we begin a new series. It's a series Scott's starting that's called, as you see up here, Spirituality. And what you probably will notice is the emphasis of the word ritual inside of this word spirituality. And what we're trying to do here, and what Scott's trying to do here, is to get us into this point of realizing that all of our lives are encompassed by a series of disciplines or rituals which set us about on our day. These disciplines are part of who we are and why we do what we do. Now, if you're like me, you may cringe the moment you hear the word discipline. As a kid, it was probably my parents' favorite use of the word for me. But we may cringe when we hear that, and that's okay. But what I want you to notice is those things in your life, which are habits and practices, and I'll be using throughout this talk, the word habit, practice, ritual, kind of interchangeably, disciplines kind of interchangeably. But what I want you to notice about those habits in your life, from brushing your teeth in the morning to having your daily cup of coffee to even your daily commute to work, these are habits which are doing something to you. Now, you would probably say that brushing your teeth is not really doing anything to you besides keeping your teeth clean. But I want you to think about those things that you do, those things that are habits and rituals that very much affect the way you think and the way that you see the world. In fact, James Smith, a modern theologian, says it this way: no habit or practice is neutral. I want you to think about that. No habit that you do, no practice that you do, is neutral. In fact, he goes on to say it this way: all habits and practices are ultimately trying to make us into a certain kind of person. All habits and practices are ultimately trying to make us into a certain kind of person. And if that is the case, then our habits and our rituals are forming us and reforming us each and every day we do them. And if you're a bit skeptical about this notion, and I completely understand if you are, I want you to think about this with me. When you commute in your car, what do you listen to and why? When you commute in your car, what do you listen to and why? When you get home at night, is there a certain TV show, certain station that you watch? Why do you watch it? What is it saying? Have you ever found yourself being bored and going to South Lake Town Center or the mall or anywhere else and just mindlessly walking around? Why do you do that? A lot of these things we don't really think about. A lot of these things we just think that we do because we do them. But each of these things that we do, each of these practices that we do, are in some way, shape, or form transforming us. They are giving us a vision of how we see people, of how we see the world. And more importantly, they are giving us an idea of what we believe the good life is. And all of this is happening to us. And so during these next few weeks, as we look through this idea of spirituality, we're going to talk about what habits and rituals can form us into the likeness of God. Because I think this is what we all want in the end. We are all seeking to be more like Christ in all parts of our lives. And these spiritual practices, we believe, if we make them practices in our life, in my life, and in the life of the congregation, can have the potential to transform us in some new ways. They have the power to transform how we see the world, how we see people, and possibly even give us a different vision of what the good life is. So in the end, as we start this series, this is our hope: to bring our entire life under the reign and rule of the merciful, loving God, who through Christ and the power of the Spirit witnessed to us what it looks like to live in the kingdom of God. That's our hope for this series. And I'll be quoting this guy many times throughout this, because he was my conversation partner as I was writing this lesson. His name was Thomas Merton. He is he was a Roman Catholic monk, and his writings have been, for me, transformative. But this is what Thomas Merton says: if you want to have a spiritual life, you must unify your life. A life is either all spiritual or not spiritual at all. No one can serve two masters. Your life is shaped by the end you live for. You are made in the image of what you desire. This quote right here is kind of the quote that propelled me into this time and this lesson. But look at what Merton says, that very end. You are made in the image of what you desire. And so today, we're going to start off with, I think Scott just for kicks thought it would be funny to give me this one, because it's incredibly difficult. He's going to get to do prayer and meditation and listening, and he gives me work. So today, we're going to look at the practice of work. And more importantly, we're going to look at how we can bring work under the reign and rule of God. And we're going to talk about for a few minutes what it means to redeem work. Because it was the great philosopher Loverboy who said this: everybody's working for the weekend. Who in here remembers that song? Come on, everybody's working for the weekend. Yeah, some people are like, I'm not raising my hand. But that's what Loverboy says. They came out with the song, everybody's working for the weekend. Work was a means to an end. And some of us today may still feel like work is this way. We're just trying to get through it so that we can get to the weekend. Others of us may see work as a fulfillment of our identity. We work so that we can work for something. There is a goal in our work, whether it's more money, more power, more notoriety. Work has a purpose for us. But more importantly, as I talked about in the beginning, our work is forming us into a way in which we see the world. And I think this is a reality because when we really look at our lives, we begin to see the divided nature of our life. We bought into this idea that our lives are split into different kind of components. And so we talk about it, work life, family life, right? And it goes back to an old modern notion of secular, spiritual, private, secular, right? I mean, we think about it, and that's what we do. We try to compartmentalize our life because that's what we've been told, and we bought into that philosophy that we can do that. Like, we have the power to have work life and family life. We have the power to have church life and other things life. If you don't believe me, you should look at our teenagers over the last 20 years. Teenagers are exceptionally well at being able to decide which life they need for that particular moment. Teenagers, youth ministry professor calls it this way: teenagers can go into their closets and decide which clothes they need to put on for that particular moment. And it all goes to a modern notion that we live these divided lives. And so that's what we try to do. But when you really think about it, think about how many times you've actually brought work home, right? Whatever went on at work, whatever happened at work, you've brought home. You tried not to, but you can't get it out of your mind what your boss told you. You can't get it out of your mind, that one conversation you had with that coworker. And so what we find rather quickly is that we can't compartmentalize. We can't say that's my work life and that's my family life. They all kind of come together. They're all kind of working together in this way, in so much that even what we're doing at work, while we may not believe it, is shaping our lives. And so through our work, we begin to see life differently. We can see the world through the lens of acquiring more. The more we do, the more money we receive, which is the which in the end means more stuff in life. Just a few more hours, one more project, one more flight will mean a couple extra zeros at the end of the paycheck. And if that's the case, so working then has a way of projecting how we see ourselves, but then also how we see others. So successful people and unsuccessful people are now defined by a certain limit. How many zeros are at the end? What is the name next to their name based on what work says? Senior this, senior that, this, 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 that. And we begin to place value on people depending on these titles. And if all of this is the case, then work has a way of defining relationships as transactional more than mutual. And in a transactional relationship, the person sitting across the table or next to you in the pew can now be viewed as an object. We can view others as what we can get from them. What does this person have to offer us? What do we have to offer them? We can exchange goods and then move on to the next person. Or if that person has nothing to give me, I can kind of brush them off to the side and continue moving. And so saying all this about work, I want to go back to the Merton quote. That very first line, if you want to have a spiritual life, you must unify your life. If you want to have a spiritual life, you must unify your life. And if Merton is right, I think he is, then work is not separate, but it is an integral forming part of your life. Work must become something other than how the power, as what Pope Paul would say, how the powers and principalities define it. Our work must, and I believe it can, be submitted to the reign and rule of God. And if we can submit our work, what we do, to the reign and rule of God, then using Merton again, work becomes not a how, but becomes part of living life. It becomes part of life. It doesn't become part of means to an end. It becomes a part of life. But how can work bring life? Because I think most of us in here would say, maybe most of us would say, I'm not sure my work brings life. It more just drains life from me. But how can work bring life? Because Merton believes it can. And I want us to look at the very first couple chapters of Genesis. I'm going to make it real easy today. Open the front part of your Bible and go like 12 pages. And you should nail it. But I want to look at Genesis 1, verses 28 through 31. And I want to look at Genesis 2. So the first two chapters of Genesis. I want to look at those two. And I want to see what God has to say about work, and I want to, for the next few minutes, transform work from that name, that language that we use of work, and I want to transform it into what Merton calls vocation, a strong feeling of suitability for a particular career or occupation. I want to change work to vocation. And this is what Genesis says in verse 1, starting verse 28. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. God said, see, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth and every bird of the air and everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I've given every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. And there was evening and there was night, the sixth day. And then skip with me in Genesis 2:15. The Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till it and keep it. Two verses of the creation story. Two texts of the creation story. In the beginning, God set out the first Adam, a vocation in the garden. And this vocation was to what? To take care of the garden. Till it. To give it, and to even give it a more sacred spin, the first Adam was to tend, if you read the Jewish Midrash and some rabbis, the first Adam was called to tend the temple of God, which was the garden, the place where God rested. We remember that. God would come in the cool of the night and walk with his people, walk with his creation. So Adam was given a priestly vocation. He was called by and into the service of God. That was his work, to till the ground, to name the animals, to be with, was his calling from God and his service to God. The vocation of Adam was blessed and called by God as good. And not just good, it was called very good. That's what we read here. It was called very good. So vocation is, from the very beginning of creation, a creational good. But we don't use the word vocation much anymore. But because I think sometimes this connotation of vocation is a little bit more spiritual. And we just don't view work that way. And I have a feeling that it's because of, a few chapters later, we have the fall. And the fall kind of changed everything. The fall gave us a curse on man, that when you till the ground, it's going to be hard, it's going to be rough, and it's going to be tough. And what we notice in this is a battle begins. We're reminded of this every day in our life. A battle begins. What once was called good is now going to be interfered by. It's going to be interfered with the powers. So therefore, work becomes interfered with desire for power, a desire for greed, and idolatry. But I don't want you to miss out on what work vocation is supposed to be. It is very good. God, from the beginning, calls it very good. What would it look like to look at our work, our vocation, as not a mundane, tedious thing that we have to get through? Not something that is just a means to get to the weekend. But what if we looked at it as what God called it, as very good? As what we do in work, as being good, but not just good in our standards, but good by God. I think it may change the way that we do work. It may change the way that we see the people that we encounter on an everyday basis. If we looked at it as from the very beginning, work is a creational good. So therefore, vocation comes out of my very being as an image bearer of God. The work that I have, the vocation that I have, is born out of my being in the image of God. The image of God doesn't change when I go to work. It becomes the calling. More importantly, it becomes the priestly calling. Well, Russell, how is what I do priestly? Because even if you read 1 Peter 2, it calls you a royal priesthood. What you do is priestly. It's a good calling from God. And now, I know that many of you will just think that I'm crazy, that if you only knew what I did, that this is a difficult job that I do, that the work that I do is not some calling on my life. What I'm asking you is to begin to, instead of thinking of your work as just a part, a piece of your life, to think of your work as a whole part of your life and bring what you do before the throne of God and into the reign and rule of God. That what you do at work is not under God's purview, but is a part of God's purview, and more importantly, is the calling that God gave you. And so now, as Merton says, either all life is spiritual or it's not. That would mean that this has to come into and under the reign and rule of God. Because you see, all of us in here believe that Christ came to redeem that which was once bad. His life was a witness to the good of creation and to bring about a wholeness in life. So our vocation is part of this wholeness. It is not separate. We are called through our vocation to bring life to others, to be a good to others. Because when God told man to till and work the ground, it was good. It didn't change. It's still good. But we, I'm afraid, kind of buy in to the power's notion that no, work is all about getting what you need to get. It's all about stepping on people. It's all about doing what you have to do to get where you want to be. But work is so much more than that under God. It becomes the calling of who you are. The very calling that you are an image bearer of Christ follows with you into work. And what I'm asking is for us to begin to transform work. To when we talk to others, we don't talk to them in our work mindset, but we talk to them as image bearers of God. We talk to them that our work is under the reign and rule of God. And so as I close, this is what I gotta say. Your work and your vocation have meaning. Your work is forming you into something. As you look at it today, what is it forming you into? Have you placed what you do under the reign and rule of Christ? Have you let the power of the Spirit redeem it and make it good? Because once we do that, work becomes a not tedious or mundane, but work becomes missional. And what I mean by that is work also becomes a mission of God redeeming the world, which is hard for us to think about, that what I do on a daily basis is a mission. But Adam and Eve were given a mission to work, and that work was to bring about the good of Eden. I would tell you today that your mission at your work and those people that you talk to and those people that you encounter is the mission to bring about good in the kingdom of God, which is in the world today. So as we think about, as we start this idea of spirituality, as we start this idea of spiritual practice, I'm here to tell you that work can, if you open yourself up, put it under the reign and rule of God, can be a spiritual practice. It doesn't get in the way of prayer, it becomes part of prayer. It doesn't get in the way of meditation, it becomes part of meditation. It becomes part of your daily life. So you're not saying work life and family life, you're just saying life. And our hope over the next few weeks is we can bring all of this together and all of us begin to be shaped and formed by what was once called good and still is.
You've been listening to Grapevine Church of Christ. Subscribe to the Sermon Podcast and to our other Grapevine Church podcast to hear special behind-the-scenes content. For more information, visit our website, www.grapevinechurch.com.